A recent Associated Press investigation finds Georgia is not actually following a U.S. Supreme Court ruling that bans life without parole for juveniles who are convicted of homicide. 25 people are currently serving a no-parole life sentence for crimes they committed as juveniles. That's according to data from the Georgia Department of Corrections. Joining us to talk about this is Jessica Sino, professor of law at Georgia State. Hi, Jessica.
Hi.
And also Stephen Reba, an attorney who directs the Appeal for Youth Clinic at Emory Law School. Reba also represented Robert Veal, a youth sentenced to life without parole. Hi, Stephen.
Hi.
Jessica, what exactly did the Supreme Court ruling say about cases that had already been decided, juveniles who were already in prison serving these sentences?
Sure. So in 2012, the U.S. Supreme Court said you cannot sentence juveniles to life in prison without parole, minus some very extreme conditions. And then, but that applied for all cases going forward. In this recent case from 2016, they then made that retroactive to anybody who is sentenced at that time as a juvenile to life without parole.
Did that also include direction on a timeline? What happens if a state does not comply?
See, and that's the tricky thing. The U.S. Supreme Court will announce a rule, but it's left to the states on how to implement that rule. And also, there's really no timeline. It just says, you can't do this, or if somebody comes up with an appeal, here's the schema that you have to follow. But there's no real, you know, way of the Supreme Court even monitoring this. That's not a job that they have.
Yeah, that's not a Supreme Court thing. So, Stephen, all of these 25 cases that the Georgia Department of Corrections points to, these are all cases that fall under the retroactive category.
Most likely, yes. And I think it's important to note, I think to say that Georgia's not following the law is technically not correct. There's two ways to do this. If you have a unified court system, which Georgia does not, perhaps then...
Wait one second. Sure. Explain what you mean by that. What do you mean Georgia doesn't have a unified court system?
Each county is separate. Some states have a centralized state organization that governs individual courts. Georgia does not do that. So really, it's not that Georgia isn't following the law. It's simply we do things differently. So there is a mechanism for all of these inmates who qualify to pursue a challenge to their sentence. It's just that they have to independently do it. The state is not going to initiate that for them, which is a bit of a problem. It makes it difficult. There's no right to counsel at that stage in the proceedings. Theoretically, if an inmate petitioned the trial court, I believe, to correct their void sentence, the court would have to appoint a lawyer if they were indigent, but that's even a little bit unclear. So you have two hurdles. First, the inmate has to be aware they qualify, and second, they have to be, you know, have the legal knowledge to pursue this pro se, at least to the point where they get an independent lawyer.
How high a bar is that? How likely is it that somebody who was convicted as a juvenile is going to know that they can get their sentence reduced and have access to be able to get that going through the courts?
It's certainly something it's certainly a resource we are trying to provide at Barton. And there was a case 3 or 4 years ago called Moore v. State, which invalidated many life without parole sentences for juveniles imposed between 93 and 2005 for a little bit of a different reason. They said the 2005 case of Roper v. Simmons, which outlaws the death penalty, applied retroactively to Georgia law because Georgia law required a defendant to be eligible for the death penalty before they could get a life without parole sentence. Now, that's a little confusing.
It is a little confusing.
Right. The point is a whole bunch of inmates there also qualified, and what we did is we sought those inmates out, asked them if they wanted...
You went and found them. It wasn't them.
Correct.
For the most part.
Correct.
Jessica, let me play you this comment from Scott Burns. He led the National District Attorneys Association, and he's speaking with NPR here back here in 2012. He's saying that the reason they ask for life without parole for a juvenile offender is because these are the very worst of the worst.
It is seldom used. It is one of the most gut-wrenching decisions a prosecutor will ever make in her or his career. But there are those just simply incredibly painful, difficult, horrific cases where, you know, it should be an option.
So what was the Supreme Court's legal justification for saying we should not put a juvenile away for the rest of their life?
Well, so part of it is it's founded in science, right? That a juvenile's brain and their ability to have judgment skills and impulse control is reduced compared to that of an adult. And so very much what they grounded their decision in is actual science. And what we saw instead, I mean, in the 80s and 90s, we came up with this idea of a super predator, right? That there are some kids who are just so bad, we should lock them up and throw away the key. And that's really, I mean, that was part of the notion of, okay, it's about punishment, it's about retribution, it's about finality. And we've never had a criminal justice system that is really focused on rehabilitation, for example. But we know, based on now decades of research, that you can, in fact, rehabilitate, especially juvenile offenders, that the way they are as juveniles is not necessarily indicative of who they're going to be as adults, even if it's for the most worst of crimes.
If you're just joining us, I'm speaking with Jessica Sino. She's law professor at Georgia State University and attorney Stephen Reba. What value, then, does the legal system place on rehabilitation? Has that changed? In other words, is part of this the idea that a juvenile can be redeemed down the road?
That's right. And it's important to note that in the most recent Supreme Court decision in Georgia in Veal, the trial court has to impose specific or find specific legal findings in order to impose a life without parole.
I should mention, you're talking about the case of Robert Veal, someone that you represented, and he was a juvenile sentenced to life without
Correct.
Parole.
To clarify this, a trial court cannot impose a juvenile life without parole sentence in Georgia unless he finds the defendant to be permanently corrupt or irreparably incorrigible. So that is
But what does that
mean?
Yeah,
what does that mean?
Okay. Well, and that's I think will be, so what will happen is trial courts will find these defendants to be irreparably corrupt. Those cases will be appealed, and we'll get decisions from the Georgia Supreme Court that will define those terms for us. I can tell you from my personal experience, having spent thousands of hours in Georgia's prisons over the last decade talking with these kids, I've yet to see one that I would deem permanently corrupt or irreparably incorrigible. Even the worst offenders who have done horrific things as juveniles cannot meet this standard. You know, every parent sees intrinsic goodness in their child because they know their child. They're the one person on earth who knows the child. And it's a lawyer's responsibility in these hearings to present these mitigating facts showing that these people are still have redemption.
How is this affected then, Jessica, by the tendency, and Georgia actually does this quite often, of trying a juvenile as an adult?
So, you know, in Georgia, I think there is this the odd system where, you know, there are, what, 8 crimes, and I think Steve can correct me if I'm wrong, but there are 8 crimes where the juvenile automatically gets tried as an adult, which is crazy. You know, and it's so hard to actually ever get that case back to the juvenile system at any point, but it's an automatic, you know, from age 13 and up that these kids get put into the adult system, which, again, just having a child who is facing, you know, even if it's not life without parole, if they end up with a sentence of 40, 50, 60 years, that's a life sentence. Let's be honest about what that is.
Stephen, you wanted to address that as also?
Just simply to say that I hope where we are, you know, under the Eighth Amendment, which is about cruel and unusual punishment, we talk about evolving standards of decency. And where I think we're going with this case is to the point where hopefully all cases involving juveniles start in juvenile court, right? Let's have a juvenile court judge. They're the best equipped to look into these kids' lives. They have the services to do it. Let's figure out who these kids actually are first and then decide what the appropriate court is for them. But let's make sure we're not missing incredibly important facts. Many of these kids have spent a significant amount of time in our child welfare system, and we need to know who these kids are. And let's do that first as opposed to at the very end when we're trying to untie a very difficult knot to untie, which is a life without parole sentence. But we should start at the front end before we transfer these cases to adult court and say, who's this kid? What has this kid been through? You know, what do we know about this child? And we have very capable judges who spend and dedicate their lives to doing that, and we should let them do that.
That is attorney Stephen Reba. We also spoke with Jessica Sino, law professor at Georgia State University. Stephen and Jessica, thank you both so much.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.